Today's show is brought to you by FanDuel. Sign up online or in the app for a free one-week trial. Just $4.99 a month for your all-access pass. Playing now on FanDuel is Rolling Stone, The Life and Death of Brian Jones. This film, which was clearly made without the cooperation of the band, examines the life of the career of Brian Jones, the founder and original leader of the Rolling Stones.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to another video podcast brought to you by the beautiful people at FanDuel. My name is Hooman, and my co-guy, Chris Kelly, is in. Where are you, Chris?
I'm remote in Carmel at the Santa Lucia Preserve, enjoying a beautiful day down here, but this is important, so here I am on Zoom.
Sucks to be Chris, man. It's rough life.
And our amazing producer, Bryn.
Yep.
Hi,
good to be here, guys.
Hi,
Camille.
How are you?
And there's Camille Grip.
This is like Camille. A schizophrenic link. It jumps from screen to screen, right?
Well, listen, we're a little bit more sophisticated than the other interviews you've done. I just want you to know that. And our questions are going to be better, too. And our amazing guest, Camille Griffin. Camille Griffin's new film is called Silent Night. And Camille, I just want to begin by saying I have to watch so many movies. We have to watch so many movies that are just so mediocre and not good. And your movie comes along and it's just a gem. And I just, before we get into the interview, I'm not just kissing your ass. I just want you to know it's well deserved. You made a great movie.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's a relief because sometimes you do press, you do interview, you're like, you can't tell if they like it and you're looking for clues.
No.
We're pretty straightforward here.
Yeah. If it was terrible, we wouldn't tell you, but I do want you to know it's good. All right. Can you talk about When the Wind Blows and how that was in some ways a catalyst for Silent Night?
It's interesting because I didn't even know if it was like a conscious thing, but someone mentioned it. No, someone asked me if I'd seen The Beach at Toronto, and I didn't.
Take everyone back to what When the Wind Blows. Like, tell everyone the story real quick.
Okay, so Where the Wind Blows, I haven't seen since I was a child. So I was probably maybe 9, 8, 9, 10. But Raymond Briggs is a famous cartoonist. I think you'd call him a cartoonist in the United Kingdom. And he wrote a famous cartoon. Is it a cartoon? It's a picture book with, I think it is.
It's a graphic novel.
Yeah. Called The Snowman. That they made into a movie and they made a Snowman 2. Anyway, he wrote and made a film about an old couple living in a rural little house during a nuclear war. And I watched it because I thought, well, that Raymond Briggs makes movies about, you know, snowmen and kids and, you know. And it was very unexpected because it was completely and utterly traumatizing. but what it did do for me at that age was like, introduced me to what a nuclear war was, and I was probably too young, but I'd never really recovered. Actually, I remember going into kind of like an existential breakdown as a kid, going, wow, we're all gonna die, you know, one day,
right?
And I wasn't kind of prepared to have those feelings of fear, so I think it's never left me. I might have to turn the light down. I've got a light on next to me.
Do it. Turn the light down. Yeah.
All I can do is see the spots on my face.
No problem. Your living room is lovely, by the way.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Blow it up, Bryn, so we can see your living room.
Oh, you got it. Let me just do it like this.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, maybe. Okay. So I highly recommend everyone go watch this cartoon because it's on Amazon. I found it for $1.99, Where the Wind Blows. It's definitely worth checking out. All right, let's talk about your film. I have very specific questions about scenes in your movie. And I watched some other interviews you did, and people were talking about your film kind of generally. I don't want to do that. I want to talk about it specifically.
Right.
So for this interview to make sense, you're going to have to go watch Silent Night. Okay, so the children in your movie are all great actors, well done with the casting, kudos. And they swear a lot. There's a lot of swearing. I was shocked at how much swearing there was. How did that go over with their parents? And talk about the rehearsals for those scenes.
Okay, so I don't know if you, I'm assuming you don't know this. So the kids are my kids, the boys.
Okay, well, great.
Oh, those are your kids.
Yeah. Oh, you have somewhat easier, right?
you have twin boys.
Fighting in the background are the kids who are swearing in the movie. So that kind of and actually, I think when I saw the film again in Toronto, I was like, God, there's a lot of swearing. What was I doing? I thought it'd be funny that as like a special treat, you know. The kids were allowed to swear because it was the end of the world. You know, curse. You guys use the word curse. I was like, right. That might be funny. But they won't stop swearing. So I was watching the movie. I was like, oh, my God, there's so much swearing. Oh, it's perfect. And we'd cut half of it out as well. But we do, in the UK, we curse a lot.
You do?
I think in America, you guys are much, you're much actually more better behaved around that kind of language, use of bad language than we are. So I don't encourage swearing. In fact, I try to stop my children swearing. But then we got on the set of Jojo Rabbit and that all like went to shit. They swear a lot, the Kiwis. So they were all swearing.
But there were other kids in the film besides your kids. And
the
their parents...
Boys.
Yeah.
The three boys are mine.
Oh, the three boys. Okay. And the one girl. Okay.
And then Davida is Thomas McKenzie's little sister, you know, from Last Night in Soho, who was in Jojo Rabbit with Roman Thomas.
Right. Okay.
And so I definitely knew that whoever the kids were going to be, they needed to be like in a safe environment to deal with this crazy material and these traumatizing. And I knew my kids would just laugh and find it funny. And they were used to chaos and dysfunction.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's talk about the moment where they say grace at the table.
Yes.
So I go to church every Sunday. I love Jesus. And you've got this very charming moment that I don't know. Like, did this really happen where one person starts praying and then another person just takes over and another? Like, how did that come about?
Okay, well, I apologize because I think it's a little bit. There was a gasp in one of the screenings I went to when in the car when they get, and they're like, so I was brought up in a religious. I went to private school, to boarding school when I was seven, and we had to go to church every Sunday, and we'd say grace in the school dining room before every meal, you know, for what we're about to receive. May the Lord make us truly thankful. So they've got this, they've given this, the children, I don't think they're a particularly religious family, but they've given this children like, we're going to be fine. We're going to heaven and it's going to be lovely and it's going to be really fun and fantastic up there. So then they have to tie it in with saying grace. And they probably said grace like we did as kids, which was for what we're about to receive, may the Lord make us truly thankful. But the job is given to Matthew Good and he doesn't know what to say.
Right. So
they all pitch in, you know. They pitch in with the pretense of like, let's look at the positivity in this situation. Kira Knightley said something interesting when we were being interviewed in Toronto. She said what she liked about the script, there was like a feminine approach to the apocalypse. And we see, I love the, you know, the day after tomorrow, or, you know, when men make apocalyptic movies, they spend the whole time trying to get into spaceship and build colonies on Mars or destroy the comet. And she liked the fact they don't do any of that because they can't. They're just like, okay, well, let's just make the most of it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there's something kind of not necessarily truthful about it, but interesting that that these people are just literally trying to make the most of it for themselves and their kids.
All right. I wanna tell you, your cast is great. Keira Knightley, Roman Davis, Matthew Good, all did amazing jobs. But do you know who stole the movie? Do you know who was your best person?
Well, if I say, then I'm kind of...
I'll say it. I'm going to say it, and then you can just, like, scratch your nose if you agree. Annabelle Wallace.
Do you know what? I think Annabelle...
Oh, my
yes.
gosh.
I'm going to scratch my nose because I have to say... she had the biggest departure in terms of what we've seen on screen with Annabelle, and she really went for it. And I think Lucy Punch is a phenomenal actress. They were all phenomenal in the film. And Keira did something incredibly brave, considering her history of the roles she plays on screen. But I think Annabelle is amazing because she's ghastly, isn't she? She's this dreadful character, but she does it so beautifully.
The best.
Yeah.
I'm very much looking forward to showing this to my kids, both because they enjoyed Jojo Rabbit so much, but also because I showed them The Imitation Game the other night, which is the first time they've seen Kira in anything but, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean movies. So, you know, get a different exposure.
Well,
for her as well.
This is an ultra different exposure, Chris. Wait till you see her in this. Let's go back to Annabelle Wallace for a quick second.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Hug Your Mom.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. That could very well be one of the, like, that could be the best scene. I mean, it was so funny. How did that come about? Talk about Hug Your Mom. And you can set up the whole scene if you want. It'll be better from you.
An absolute credit to Annabelle. And I don't even know if this was a good thing. I laughed a lot on set. And I laughed a lot. And often they'd be like, she'd be like, Cammy, I can hear you laughing. Cut. We have to cut. I'd be like, sorry, cut. Okay, let's do it again. Because I'd be like, Hug Your Mom. I mean, I just think she's hilarious because her daughter's kind of slightly kind of disattached to her emotions. I don't know if she's necessarily on the spectrum, and I don't want to be, I'm definitely on the spectrum of some kind, so I don't want to be disrespectful about that. But who'd want to have a mom like that? And I just thought it was hilarious, the idea that.
So, like, so in the scene, the mom gives her daughter a Christmas gift. The daughter.
The dad does it.
Oh, the dad does.
He wants all the credit.
Right.
He's like, he's bought a present that gives him credit. It's like, you're the best dad in the whole wide world. So, and she's like, well, what? Because most parents or people buy gifts from the both of them, right?
Yes.
He's done a slightly mean thing. She's bad cop, he's good cop, and he's taking advantage of being good cop. So he's bought her a present, and he gets all the celebration and thanks.
And this is his way of getting revenge, because she basically walks all over him the rest of the movie. It's just so smart. Okay, listen, I want to ask a philosophical question here. Are you enjoying this interview so far, by the way?
Yeah, of course I am. I hope you don't mind that I'm smoking. It is just a roll.
Yeah, smoke away.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Our boss Phil smokes a pipe at every single one of our conference calls, so we're used to it. What's up, Phil? All right.
Shout out to Phil.
So this is kind of the sign of the times question. In your film, there's a lot of intense, brutally honest moments, and there isn't any political correctness. And right now, we live in a time where you just can't say anything without everyone claiming to be offended. Do you think in 2021, a night like this, like your movie, could actually happen where everyone is brutally honest and everyone still forgives everyone and moves on and they're still friends? Do you think this happens today?
Well, yes and no. But the point is, in trying to parody the class system that I have, my class system that I was brought up in and the challenges I have with that, I think... In essence, the privileged get away with a lot, right?
Right.
And we see that all the time, and we're also seeing that in the courtroom at the moment, you know, with the trials that just finished with the shootings. And the fact is, why do white posh people get away, or why do the white privileged get away with behavior? And I think behind closed doors, they get away with a lot worse. So the two questions is, do I think you can behave like an asshole with your friends? Yes. If there's enough love in history, the incorrectness in the movie was intentional, because I'm trying to comment about the behavior they think they can get away with, you know, in society. But it is offensive, and it's intended to be offensive. But I think maybe, given where we're at now, it's perhaps too offensive at times. But I think it's the kind of microaggression that people suffer every day, and. One of the journalists at the Daily Mail in the UK, he said how grateful he was to see that kind of the racist comments portrayed, because it's the comments that he has to put up with daily at work, you know, that are mm-hmm. the more subtle innuendos and comments. So I think that's what you're talking about. Is that what you're talking about?
It is what I'm talking about. But I'm also like, you know, political correctness, in my opinion, can go too far and often does go too far. And you just punch it right in the face and you let loose and there's no rules and it's just genuine. It's just real. And nobody's having to pretend to walk on eggshells in your film at all. No one walks on eggshells.
No,
everyone, And that's
it's the end of the world.
It's the end of the world. They've got nothing to lose, one, and two, they don't think they're being questioned. You know, they don't think they're under anyone's examination. It's like, who are we when we're being watched, and who are we when we're not being watched? You know, I think a long time ago, a friend of mine who's an actress, she said, when she makes decisions in life, she says, would I do this if someone was photographing me doing that? And there's a whole cancel culture now, which is what you're saying, which is like,
right.
Who are we under examination, and who are we actually truthfully? You know, so I think that is always, and if you can't put it on screen and you can't have fun with it, you know, how can we examine ourselves if we can't take the piss out of ourselves a bit, you know?
Right. And, right.
And I think as a filmmaker, I think if you're going to make a film that you care about or that you're going to be proud of, then you have to put your shit on the screen, you know?
Let's end with this question here because we're running out of time and I know you have one more interview after this.
Sorry.
It's all good. Like,
it's all
we're
good.
Blessed to have this time with you.
Yeah.
I'm blessed. Thank you.
Tell us two or three movies that inspired you, movies that you love that have stayed with you over the years. Maybe movies we may not have heard of, maybe movies that are super popular, but films that just really touched you.
I think about that a lot because obviously I like to show movies to my kids, but also they're getting older and I don't want to also traumatize them because I think, you know, having me as a mother is traumatic enough. you know, I love the film Festen. Did you ever see Festen?
No, tell us about it.
Oh, it's incredible. And it's, I suppose there's comparisons. It's about a family get together. It's a Danish film. And they're celebrating the father's like 70th birthday or something. And one of the kids has been abused in his past and he wants to get it out. And they lock him up and they throw him out and they do everything they can to shut him up. They just won't let him speak the truth. And I remember seeing that film. It's you know, it's not an easy film to watch, but I remember thinking, wow, that really spoke to me.
Hmm. It's Festin, Festen?
Yes.
Okay. All right. What else?
It's Vinterberg, I think, Thomas Vinterberg. I mean, it's one of his greatest movies. We did a whole Hitchcock thing during lockdown. I'm obsessed with Cary Grant.
Yes.
I dare say it, but I do really love Roman Polanski movies. I named Roman after Polanski, which is again very politically incorrect, but he is
the artist in a number of different cases. The number of different cases you have to, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like he's a very special filmmaker. So the kids saw Rosemary's Baby for the first time the other day.
Wow.
I also, you know, it's maybe again politically incorrect to say, but I also think Woody Allen's funny. But, you know, it doesn't mean he's a good person. We know that that's definitely on the line right now.
Yeah.
So I think there's some definitely questionable people have made some very impactful films that I've experienced in my life. And yeah. I grew up loving French cinema. There was a film called Trop Belle Pour Toi, which was a Depardieu movie where he's married the most beautiful woman on earth, but he just wants to shag his kind of unattractive secretary. I just like that.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I like humanity stories but I also like action movies and romantic comedies I do like something a little bit, you know, that pushes the boundaries.
Remind us the Gerard Depardieu movie. What's it called again?
Trop belle pour toi, which is too beautiful for me.
Oh, nice.
And I'm not saying that's a direct influence, but I'm just saying these were films I grew up watching and I was like, wow, you know. I mean, Rosemary's Baby, you know, when I was pregnant with the twins, I was like, oh my God, what's going on, Ben? I was like, Ben, the devil's inside me. We need to get to the doctors. And they scanned me. They were like, you're having twins. I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Okay, it's all good now, right?
Yeah, but, you know, so I think cinema has always had a huge impact on me growing up.
Her name is Camille Griffin. Her film is Silent Night. It's on AMC Plus, correct?
Absolutely, yes. And it'll be in the cinemas too.
Yeah. Oh, it will.
Yeah.
December 3rd.
They said it will. So that.
Camille, I just want to end by saying you are such a joy to talk to. We do a ton of interviews. You're so pleasant. And this is going to seem weird, but I hope one day our paths cross and we can 100%. have a cup of coffee and just hang out.
That's,
you know,
very kind of you, and you're always welcome to reach out. And very lovely to meet you, chaps. And
awesome, you too.
Thanks for your great
good
questions.
Good to meet you, Camille.
Oh, was it good?
Yeah, really good.
Oh,
really
great.
Fun.
All
right. I'm gonna call Annabelle and tell her she's got a major fan in you.
I want to say, if she's single, I would I just want to throw. I want to throw my name into the hat. If it's, okay.
I'll definitely tell her.
Yeah, Hooman. My name is Hooman.
His name is Hooman.
yeah, that would be cool, right? Yeah.
Right. That would be amazing. Okay. All right, Camille.
Stay safe.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Camille. All right, take care.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. Today's show is brought to you by FanDuel. Sign up online or in the app for a free 1 week trial. Playing now in Fandor is Rolling Stone, The Life and Death of Brian Jones. This film, which was clearly made without the cooperation of the band, examines the life of the career of Brian Jones, the founder and original leader of the Rolling Stones. That's Fandor, FANDOR, the home for cinephiles.